Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid.
This is definitely a blue-collar community, and I'm kind of a blue-collar guy.
Rick Sealscott didn't see himself as a farmer, but wasn't about to sell his grandparents' Ohio farm. An Avangrid wind farm pays millions to the community and landowners like him each year.
Farming's up and down, but the wind turbines give us steady income. We're holding on to the farm, and we're making money. And I would absolutely do it again.
Discover where energy meets humanity at avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, in an interview with The Times, President Trump gives his account of a previously undisclosed conversation with Vladimir Putin and expresses his anger towards key figures in the Russia investigation, including his own attorney general. He never would have appointed Jeff Sessions, he says, if he knew then what he knows now. It's Thursday, July 20th. On Wednesday afternoon, my colleagues Peter Baker, Michael Schmidt, and Maggie Haberman interviewed President Trump in the Oval Office.
The president was running late. We were sitting outside the Oval Office, and we see the president come down through the Rose Garden with Vice President Pence and walk up. He had just had lunch with Republican senators about health care, and he walks in. And a few moments later, his aide comes out and says, it's time to see the president.
Hi, fellas. How you doing?
Good.
How'd you watch? Good. It was good. I mean, we're very close. It's a tough, you know, healthcare. Look.
Maggie, what did the president say about the collapse of the healthcare bill in the interview?
The president seemed very aware that, health care has not gotten done and that it was something that he had promised during the campaign. He referenced that a few times. He said, made the point of mentioning that Congress has promised it for a while, the Republicans in Congress. And he raised the fact that Barack Obama took, 13 months, close to 14 months to get his bill passed. He raised the fact that Hillary Clinton was the wife of a sitting president with a Democratic-controlled Congress, and she couldn't get anything done.
When you think of Hillary Clinton, and you look, she went 8 years, very capable, went 8 years with as the first lady and could not get health care.
Almost as if the benchmark that he should be judged by. That
in other words, that we shouldn't be judging the president on the fact that he wasn't able to get health care done in just 6 months.
Correct.
I'm not in here 6 months. And they'll say, Trump hasn't fulfilled his agenda. You know, but I'm saying to myself, well, wait a minute, I'm here for a very short period of time.
As if these things take a long time and they are complicated. I think that this was something that he felt was important for us to remember.
But this is despite the fact that he repeatedly said that as soon as he came in, he would have the answer to health care. So this is a new argument, which is instead of I'm going to fix this off the bat, health care is hard.
A very narrow path winding this way. You think you have it, and then you lose four on the other side because you gave it. It is a brutal process. And it was for the Democrats in all fairness.
Okay, so Maggie, we reported a couple of days ago that at the G20 summit last week, the president had a second undisclosed conversation with Russian President Vladimir Putin. How does that come up in the interview?
So Peter Baker, our colleague, asked the question.
I'm a little curious about your extra conversation with President Putin at dinner.
Not surprising,
but it didn't. What did y'all talk about it?
About this meeting and what had transpired. And the president was clearly irritated that it had become a big fire. He said he had been sitting with Prime Minister Abe's wife.
And she's a terrific woman, but doesn't speak English. Like, not
like nothing, right? It's zero?
Like, not hello.
That must make for an awkward seating.
Well, it's hard because, you're sitting for
hours.
It lasted. So the dinner was probably an hour and 45 minutes.
He described it in a very lighthearted way as something that was just kind of offhand.
So we're sitting at this massive table, and the wives are separated from the husbands, which sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but they did it. And it's always easier when they don't do it. You always have somebody to talk to.
At some point, he got up to go talk to his own wife.
And now Melania was sitting on the other side of the table, way down on the other end, very far away. She was sitting next to Putin and somebody else, I don't know. She was sitting next to Putin.
She had been the whole time, or she had been?
The whole time. No, she was sitting next to Putin.
Does she speak Russian at all?
No, it doesn't. She speaks other languages.
Yeah,
which we were curious about because she's from Eastern Europe.
So she's sitting next to Putin and somebody else, and that's the way it is. So the meal is going through. And toward dessert, I went down just to say hello to Melania. And while I was there, I said hello to Putin. Really pleasantries more than anything else. Was not a long conversation, but it was, you know, could be 15 minutes, just talked about things.
He basically described it as essentially chit-chat, that they were just sort of talking.
Putin and Trump just chit-chatting.
Putin and Trump just chit-chatting.
It was very interesting. We talked about adoption.
You did?
Russian adoption, yeah. I always found that interesting because, you know, he ended that years ago. And I actually talked about Russian adoption with him, which is interesting because that was a part of a conversation that Don had with his meeting that I
And what does he? What does that mean?
The Russian. Well, what he means is the policy that was changed to bar American families from adopting Russian children, which was done in response to sanctions that were signed, called the Magnitsky Act. And what was interesting about that is the Magnitsky Act was initially described as the focus of a meeting that Trump's son, Don Jr., had with a Russian lawyer on June 9th, 2016 at Trump Tower that we have come to learn was actually initially advertised as a meeting about potential dirt on Hillary Clinton.
From the Russian government. Right.
You know, when they call up and they say, by the way, we have information on your opponent. I think most politicians, I was just with a lot of people, they said, who wouldn't have taken a meeting like that? They just said, a lot of them. They said, who wouldn't have taken a meeting like that? And that was before Russia. No, a couple of them. That was before Russia was hot, don't forget.
Right.
You know, Russia wasn't hot then. That was almost a year and a half ago. So Russia wasn't like it is, like it wasn't radioactive. Russia was Russia.
So, Maggie, do we think that there's any connection between the fact that adoption was discussed in that meeting with Don Jr. and the fact that Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump now are talking about it in their face-to-face meeting we didn't know about?
I don't know, and I'm really hesitant to speculate, just given how little we know about this meeting. But if it did come up, and it didn't necessarily have to be in connection with Don Jr., you know, it's really a meeting that's about sanctions. And so if that was raised, that's a little more than idle chit-chat.
It's just this odd coincidence that we weren't able to make sense of in real time and are still not quite sure about.
Got it. Mike, I imagine you're especially interested in speaking to the president about James Comey, the former FBI director, and the Russia investigation.
For some time, I'd been trying, you know, along with my colleagues, to get in front of the president and try and learn more about the Russia investigation. This is a massive cloud over his presidency, and this is a president who likes to use on-the-record interviews to either clear things up or make points, and this is certainly an incredibly hot issue, and I wanted to get in front of him to talk about that.
What happens there in the interview?
Trump addresses a January 6th interaction he had with Comey. Comey and the head of the CIA, the head of the NSA, and the director of national intelligence went to Trump Tower in January to brief Trump on the Russian meddling in the election. After that meeting, Comey pulled Trump aside and told him about the dossier. This is this document compiled by a former British spy who's deeply sourced in Russia and has these very salacious allegations about Trump in it.
I didn't know what to think other than this is really phony stuff.
Why do you think he shared it?
What Trump says when asked about this is that,
in my opinion, he shared it so that I would think he had it out there.
As leverage?
Yeah, I think so. In retrospect.
What Comey has said is that he told Trump this because Trump had a right to know that this was out there about them and that the FBI was learning or afraid that a media organization was going to write about it. But from Trump's perspective, this was sort of like, you know, psst, hey, look at what we've got.
So were you surprised by anything the president had to say on this topic of Comey and the Russia investigation? And was any of it in contradiction, Mike, to your reporting?
Well, certainly the biggest thing that the president refuted is this February 14th meeting that Comey has testified he had with Trump. This is where Trump kicks everyone out of the room and corners Comey as Comey sits at the Resolute desk in the same chair as we were in today. And Trump says to him, I need you to move beyond the Flynn investigation. I need you to end the investigation of my former national security advisor. And Trump says he has no recollection of that.
Did you shoo other people out of the room when you talked to Comey that time of the day?
No, I didn't. That was the other thing. I told people to get out of the room. Why would I do that?
Did you actually have a one-on-one with Comey then?
Not much. Not even that I remember. He was sitting, and I don't remember even talking to him about any of this stuff. He said, I asked people to go, look, you look at his testimony. His testimony is loaded up with lies.
So that's a direct contradiction to Comey's account. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing, if you're Bob Mueller, the special prosecutor, and you're investigating this, there were a lot of people that got kicked out of the room, the attorney general, the vice president, the chief of staff, other aides.
Right, witnesses to it, right.
Correct. So if you're Mueller, you'll be able to figure out whether there was a one-on-one because those folks will be able to tell you in an interview what happened, not what happened in the room, but whether this meeting actually happened, which Trump is raising questions about.
And the president said explicitly that James Comey lies.
Correct. He says that Comey lies in his testimony, that Comey illegally leaked information about his interactions with Trump.
He leaked. The reason he leaked, so he illegally leaked.
And that Comey just cooked all this stuff up about him as part of a larger conspiracy.
So, Maggie and Mike, you both asked repeatedly about Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, who's leading the Russia investigation into the Trump administration.
What would cause you, what would be the line beyond which, if Mueller went, you would say that's too far, we would need to dismiss him?
Look, there's so many conflicts that everybody has.
What did President Trump say about Special Prosecutor Mueller?
He said a number of things, but one of the things he talked about is something that White House aides have mentioned for several weeks in frustration, which is that they say that Robert Mueller had interviewed for interim FBI director.
Did you know Mueller was one of the people that was being interviewed?
I did, actually.
He was sitting in that chair. We had a wonderful meeting.
Day before,
did he want the job?
The day before. Of course, he was up here. Mueller wanted the job.
So after Comey had been fired?
After Comey had been fired.
I said, what the hell is this all about? You talk about conflicts. Mm-hmm. No, he was interviewing for the job.
He described it as, you know, Mueller has having conflicts. That was clearly one of them in his mind.
Because, so what he's saying is because Mueller had come in and potentially viewed himself as a candidate to be interim FBI director, that was disqualifying to investigate the president on Russia.
Correct.
If Mueller was looking at your finances or your family's finances unrelated to Russia, is that a red line?
Would that be a breach of what his actual
I would say yes. Yeah, I would say yes.
The president clearly sees the Mueller investigation as one that should be focused on Russia.
But if he was outside that lane, would that mean he'd have to go?
No, I think that's a violation. Look, this is about Russia.
A quote-unquote violation. However, we pressed him repeatedly on whether he would be willing to dismiss Mueller.
What does the violation mean?
What is that? What is that violation?
He wouldn't go there.
But what would you do?
I can't answer that question because I don't think it's going to happen.
He's clearly watching Mueller to see how far he'll go and in what directions and whether that's beyond Russia.
So let's just keep going with the cast of characters in all of this. What did the president say during this interview about his attorney general, Jeff Sessions?
He said,
Sessions should have never recused himself. And if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me before he took the job, and I would have picked somebody else.
He gave you no heads up at all in any sense.
Zero.
He said that he never would have appointed him had he known that Sessions was going to recuse himself on Russia-related issues.
Wow, that's a big statement.
It's a big statement on the record.
So Jeff Sessions takes the job, gets into the job, recuses himself. I then have, which frankly, I think is very unfair to the president. How do you take a job and then recuse yourself? If he would have recused himself before the job, I would have said, thanks, Jeff, but I can't, I'm not going to take you. It's extremely unfair And that's a mild word to the president.
It's essentially saying that the attorney general shouldn't be the attorney general.
Right.
And it could be seen as pretty undermining to his authority.
I mean, what does it even mean to be an attorney general when the president of the United States, your boss, tells the New York Times that he would have never appointed you if you had done the thing that you thought was the right thing to do and that you did?
Well, I think it makes it very complicated for Jeff Sessions' path forward.
Maggie, at one point in this interview, which is veering from policy to politics to investigation, there's an interruption.
But people didn't. We had a couple of people that said, "Hi, baby, how are you?" My grandmother, this is Arabella, who speaks. Say hello to them in Chinese.
Yeah.
Is Ivanka? You know Ivanka?
At one point, Ivanka Trump and her daughter Arabella, who just turned 6, showed up in the doorway of the Oval. Arabella ran into the room, and she ran to her grandfather, who greeted her as baby, and gave her a kiss. And then he encouraged her to speak Chinese to us.
She speaks Chinese.
She apparently speaks some Chinese.
She speaks fluent Chinese. She's amazing. She spoke with President Xi. Went up to him. He looked at me and said, "I can't believe it. Honey, can you say a few words in Chinese? Say, like, I love you, Grandpa."
Well, I love Grandpa.
Aww. Very good.
That's great.
She's unbelievable, huh?
Can you say stop?
Well, she has good, smart genes.
It was impressive for a 6-year-old to do that in front of strangers.
It was an unexpected glimpse into kind of the grandfather Trump.
Well, you're sitting there interviewing the president about really weighty subjects.
Yes.
Russia.
Yes.
And the cloud it's over his presidency. And all of a sudden, his cute granddaughter comes running in, and he gives her a hug. And it's like this incredible juxtaposition.
Right. It totally throws you off, I assume.
Of tender grandfatherness and the harsh reality of this Russia investigation.
That's right. That's right.
Mike, did you feel satisfied by what the president told you on Russia? And if you didn't, what do you still want him to answer?
I think as a journalist trying to understand the scope of what Mueller's investigation is and what may have happened, you're never satisfied. It's interesting to hear him try and deconstruct his relationship with Comey and make sense of that, because this is clearly something that has sideswiped him and really knocked him off track and has essentially given him Bob Mueller sitting there staring him down. And you can see he's still trying to deal with that, and he's saying, look, in retrospect, I look back on this meeting, and I think this, and this didn't happen. So you see him trying to calibrate that and try and get his side out about that. As soon as he realized that we were going to listen to him and we were open to hearing what he was saying, that he was willing to talk and kept going. And it went on for, you know, it was a 50-minute interview.
Mike, how exactly did the encounter end with the president?
One of the last things he says to us is, look, I'm doing a good job.
I have done a job that people can't even believe. And you look at the numbers, you look at what's going on, we're doing a great job.
And please treat me fairly.
I'm doing a good job. Just treat it fairly. Because I can take everything I said and put a stupid spin on it, or I can put a fair spin. Just treat it. And we'll meet in a couple of weeks.
Just let my words speak for themselves. And if you're fair to me, see you soon.
Sir, thank you. Appreciate the time.
Maggie, Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for having us.
On Wednesday night, a spokesman for Jeff Sessions declined to comment on the president's remarks. We'll be right back.
What can a painting of Queen Elizabeth I teach us about power? And how did tattoos become both revered and reviled? Hi, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the first episode of This Is Not a Beauty Podcast, we'll hear from a top Capitol Hill makeup artist and meet the world's oldest tattooist to understand how beauty shapes politics. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform, brought to you by L'Oreal Group.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the Extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
I use New York Times Cooking at least 3 to 4 times a week.
I love sheet pan bibimbap. It said 35 minutes. It was 35 minutes.
The cucumber salad with soy, ginger, and garlic. Oh my God, that is just to die for.
This turkey chili has over 17,000 5-star ratings. So easy, so delicious.
The instructions are so clear, so simple, and it just works.
Hey, it's Eric Kim from New York Times Cooking. Come cook with us. Go to nytcooking.com.
Here is what else you need to know today. Senator John McCain has been diagnosed with brain cancer. The tumor was discovered following surgery for a blood clot above McCain's left eye, which delayed a Senate vote on the Republican health care bill before its ultimate collapse on Tuesday. The 80-year-old senator has represented Arizona since 1983, first as a member of the House of Representatives. And
welcome to the inaugural meeting of the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity.
The commission set up by President Trump to investigate whether voter fraud cost him the popular vote held its first meeting on Wednesday amid lawsuits challenging the legality of its work and the absence of any evidence that widespread illegal voting occurred.
This commission has no preconceived notions or preordained results. We're fact finders.
Despite broad resistance and complaints from state election officials, the commission's chairman, Vice President Mike Pence, said that more than 30 states had ultimately agreed to share data on their voters with the commission. President Trump said that was not sufficient.
If any state does not want to share this information, one has to wonder what they're worried about. And I asked the vice president, I asked the commission, what are they worried about? There's something. There always is.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.